Hi, this is James Devine with the Music Ed Podcast. And on today's podcast, I have Greg Martin, author of Marching Band Techniques.
Strike up the band so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your experience with marching bands and how you came to write marching band techniques.
So I've been teaching either public school or collegiate now for 38 years. So I started off as a high school band director, of course, marching band associated with that, in a very, very small school in Central Florida. Then after a couple of years, moved to a very large school in Central Florida, and at that point became associated with the Suncoast Sound Drum and Bugle Corps that was out of the Tampa Bay area. So besides running my own high school program, I was working with Suncoast Sound, started there actually as a rifle tech for the color guard, and then a couple of years in, they changed their visual staff and became the visual coordinator for, and you know, taught the basics and all of that, ran their basics program. So yeah, taught high school band 16 years, taught middle school band 3 years after that, and worked with the high school band that I fed. Taught drum corps for a total of 12 years. After Suncoast Sound, I ended up going to Magic of Orlando and worked with them a couple of years. Then college, taught at the University of Texas, and I wrote the drill for the marching band there. And writing drill has kind of been my thing as far as the whole that and the basics. I actually published a Marching Fundamentals DVD back in the mid to late 80s that's still being sold this day. Horrible, horrible outfits now because they're so dated. But so I've just been involved with the marching arts the entire 38 years that I've been doing this.
Very cool. Very cool. What do you think is the most important aspect of marching band that many directors neglect?
For me, I feel like we spend so much time in rehearsals, extra rehearsals, so much time with the marching band that I came to look at that as my time to fix the fundamentals of playing with the students. And I, instead of looking at marching band as the big oogie boogie, you know, the redheaded stepchild of what it is that we do, I embraced that time because that gave me X amount of hours every single week outside of the classroom that I could teach my kids how to play their instruments better. And I never changed my approach from to the instruments outside to inside. A lot of times, a lot of my friends used to always refer to my marching band as having a symphonic sound on the field. You could always hear my woodwinds. Everything was balanced. We still provided some punch and impact when we needed to, but my approach was no different. The kids played the same outside as they played inside, and I was able to accomplish that because of all the extra time. So I think there's that aspect that a lot of teachers miss out on this day and age. The other thing is they're only going to sound as good on the field as their feet are able to move. And, you know, we look at marching fundamentals as the necessary thing we have to do because we have to march and I have to teach them glide step and I have to do all this stuff. And that's really what enables them. Once they get that physical aspect second nature, then they can actually concentrate on playing and listening to one another. And until we get it second nature through teaching them proper technique physically, they're never going to sound as great as they possibly could. So I think those are my two biggest points. I make that a lot with my students here at the university as I'm constantly talking to them about the necessity for a great fundamentals program, but that's efficient So you're not having to spend hours and hours and hours and hours on it, and better use of the time to teach fundamentals.
So would you say a lot of band directors neglect that the sound portion of it then?
I do. I think a lot of people, and when I judge, I definitely get this sense. There's a lot of teachers out there that go for a different sound on the field because it's outside. And even I had small bands. My first band, I only had 33 wind players.
Oh, wow.
And they sounded like 33 wind players who could play their instruments. You know, it wasn't a huge sound. We didn't try to be 110. We sounded like 33.
I think that's probably the mistake I make sometimes is I try. I've had small bands too. We had 65 this last year, and that was our biggest ever. But we started with like 18. And I think sometimes I tried to get them to sound like a band of 100 when we didn't have 100.
And what ends up happening is we just get these, you know, uncontrolled sounds because they're trying to be something they can't be from a volume standpoint, rather than just embracing the sound, keeping them all in the front of the field so they're not having to overblow because they're too far back in the field, and, you know, using other things to bring the size of the field down. I think Sue Smith, the school, St. James School, that's what it is. She's at St. James. That's Robert Smith's wife. Sue Smith does a beautiful job with a very small band and bringing the size of the field down so you don't feel like you're looking at 25 kids on the field, because she uses props, or she'll use pieces of a floor, like a winter guard floor, that frame the band. And all of a sudden now, instead of dealing with 100 yards, you're dealing with about 20 or 30 from midfield forward.
Very cool.
Of a sudden, yeah, they don't look so small. And then they don't have to worry about playing louder than they're supposed to. So yeah, I think the sound thing, I always looked at my groups as a musical ensemble that just happened to be moving around. So I always challenged them, if you had somebody who you took their sight away from them, it should sound like we're standing still, no matter what we're doing.
I love that. A music ensemble that happens to be moving around. And I've heard this advice from a lot of more experienced directors also, and people who are into judging. Some of my mentors have said the same thing. They said, don't change the sound. Make the sound the primary thing, and then that's going to benefit your concert program, and vice versa, the concert
right.
program.
Everything just feeds off itself. And I mean, a good characteristic in-tune sound is going to be a fuller sound than a loud, out-of-tune, blatty sound.
Right.
You know, if you just concentrate on things that we do inside without even thinking about it, if you concentrate on that outside, you're going to get a much better result in both groups. Both groups are just going to be like a ladder. They're going to just climb right up.
Very good. Very good. I'm about a third of the way through your book, and I'm looking forward to finishing up. I'm highlighting a lot of things and learning a lot of things from it. One of the things, as I flipped through, that I didn't notice, and maybe you have a resource for where we can find this. Every time I meet other directors, I'll pick up a new exercise or some kind of thing I can incorporate into my marching band fundamentals to help them. Is there a resource somewhere where directors can find a bunch of these exercises?
There's actually, if you go later in the book, there's when it talks about marching fundamentals, actually developing a fundamentals program, there's a couple of exercises, spatial type exercises, that I get into, and I even have some printed pictures, pictorial examples of that. I mean, as far as the actual fundamentals themselves, a lot of that depends on what your style is. You know, we all do some sort of the glide step. We all do some sort of mark time. And it just depends on what your belief system is about the fundamentals. And I think this day and age, with YouTube and all the resources and things that are out there, there's probably, like, for example, I do a lot of research on percussion and, like, how to do crab step and how to do direction changes if you're doing the crab step. And there's tons and tons of resources online that have videos that actually show and teach that type of thing. So I think there's a lot out there where that's concerned. Like I said, the things that I approach in the book, besides, because I never want to get into style. You know, if I'm teaching somebody about how to set up a fundamentals program, I'm certainly not going to force my style on anyone else. Uh-huh. So I don't go a lot into style, but I do go into a lot about spatial awareness and form awareness and how to address those. And so, I mean, there are a lot of those exercises in the book itself.
That was always my, when I first started teaching marching band, that was probably my weakest area, because I would think I had a good attention, for example, teaching the kids that. And then someone would come in and they'd say, oh, look at this, look at the hips, look at the where their butt is, where their neck is. And then I had more tools at my disposal. And it's like, wow, my concept of what looked good for attention was only 20% of what was possible.
Right, right. And I mean, to be very honest with you, my marching style kind of evolved out of working with Suncoast Sound and working with Robert Smith on what we could do to have the least amount of effect on the players, on their playing. So all of the technique that I developed, the glide step, direction changes, all of that stuff was developed to have the least impact on the knees, the ankles, the muscles, and the leg, and to create as smooth of an upper body as we possibly could. Uh-huh. And even the attention, like you were talking about, the attention is all about how to enable the players to take in air and look uniform, but at the same time be able to be musicians.
I love that. I love that focus of that. So I'm in my second school. I've been here 11 years. And when I first came here, there was no marching band. And I hate to make this confession now, but I was totally against starting one. All my friends who were teaching marching bands, a lot of them were getting burnt out, and some of them were going to junior high or some kind of less stressful job. But I had a great mentor who was close to retirement. And he said, you be the one to control it and don't let it control you. So when I started 11 years ago, I still had two of my kids in elementary school, and we started one day a week doing we just had a parade marching band that first season. And that one day a week happened to be the day that my wife was off, and so I knew she could be home for the two young ones. And now it's grown to a full-fledged thing. We've got 2 weeks of camp, two or three days a week after school that we meet. But I know there are other directors who maybe they see other people who have burnt out and they say, I'm not sure if I'm going to start a marching band or if I want to start a marching band. And they're thinking not because they're fundamentally against marching band, but because of what they see. What would you say to a director who is maybe sitting on the fence and wants to start one but is afraid of burnout or something like that?
First off, and this is a principle that I teach the students here, I've taught it ever since I've been teaching college. Anytime the tail wags the dog, whether it be marching band, jazz band, indoor drumline, indoor color guard, or even not so much concert band, because I think concert band is the dog. But anytime the tail starts wagging the dog, we have a problem. And that's when the program is losing balance. So I think a lot of people hesitate about the marching band thing because it is this larger than life aspect of our programs. I mean, nobody can argue with the fact that more people will see our marching and hear our marching band than will hear any other part of the program all combined.
Right.
That is our biggest PR tool. Nobody can argue that as long as we go about it the right way, the kids have a lot of fun doing it. You can't argue that because they do. They enjoy going out there and doing that. Where we run into trouble is when we get so just completely paralyzed by the competitive nature of it that we have to practice 15 hours a week after school, and it just becomes this thing that completely overwhelms the lives of the students and the parents. And it becomes all about, well, we have to win this contest. We have to win. You know, I always taught my students that if they walked off that field after performing and felt like they had done the very best job they were capable of for that time in the season, that they won. It doesn't matter what three or six judges think. It doesn't matter what scores announce. 9 times out of 10, that tends to take care of itself. Because if they are all concentrating on trying to do their best, they usually end up doing pretty well when it comes to the others, the scoring and the placement and all that stuff. But, you know, I've had kids, I've had bands that have gone to a festival or a contest, excuse me, and not placed and been totally excited about the performance they gave. And I've had bands that have gone to contest and won a contest by 20 points. And they come up to me and afterwards and go, we didn't deserve that. We were awful tonight. So it's really important, I think, that if you're going to have a marching band, if you're going to start a marching band, you make sure that it is just one aspect of the program, that we concentrate on making it educational and fun by not making it too overwhelming as far as the time that we're committing to it and dollars. I mean, let's face it, it's an expensive venture out there. There's a local band director here. As a matter of fact, I just visited with her today. She has a student teacher of mine that she decided about 10 years ago to stop doing all competitions and they just do a football band. It's a very small rural school. They've got 170 kids in the band program. They love marching band because they go out 2 nights a week, put together a different show every 2 to 3 weeks.
Wow.
Just have a blast doing it. And they do fun music. You know, they'll do a Rolling Stones show or they'll do a Justin Bieber show or something like that. They just have a blast doing it. And kids just flock to be in that program. There's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for that. You know, I mean, this day and age when students are just so incredibly busy with athletics and clubs and you know all the things that they're involved in now, I think if we are going to survive in this activity, we've got to make sure that we're giving them something worthwhile for their time and at the same time challenging them through what it is that we're doing with them, but not letting the tail wag the dog.
I really love your philosophy of marching band, and it sounds like something that's been developed over a long period of time and kind of settled in 38 years.
38 years. I learned a lot those first couple of years, let me tell you.
Do you think there's a place for any of that? And the reason I ask sometimes when my band generally tends to be the one that is happy with how we did. We have a good time. Sometimes we come back early from things because I remember this last fall there was – I think homecoming was happening or something. Mm-hmm. So we made a compromise and some people went home early and some of us stayed and watched some of the other bands. But sometimes they'll see a band that really moves them and they'll say, well, why can't we be like that band? And I'll tell them what that band's rehearsal schedule is. And most of the time they're like, oh, never mind. We're fine where we're at.
Right. I think there is a way to compromise with that. I think we can... If we're smart, I've been just as guilty as the next person of, you know, trying to be the next drum corps on the field and putting these huge shows together with all of this movement and difficult music. I've done that and made horrible mistakes where that's concerned. I think it's very possible to compromise and to use festivals and competitions. Again, if it's just part of the program and not wagging the dog, to teach students. I think we really have gone almost too far the other way right now as a society where all, you know, the students, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody is a winner. Everybody gets to play. Everybody gets the, you know, and they never learn how to handle when things don't always go well. Uh-huh. And when we shy away from the competitive thing, I think we're doing a huge disservice to our students. But at the same time, competition has to be a tool not the main goal.
Right, right.
You know, and I think it's very possible to do a good mixture of both of those without being the band that practices 3 hours a day every day after school and 8 hours on Saturday and, you know, goes to every single competition that was out there. I have a young band director close by. He actually finished his master's degree here a couple of years ago, and I was doing his all-county band that he was hosting. And he was talking about the next marching season and how they had 11 marching band contests lined up, one every wow. single Saturday. And I just stopped him and I looked at him and I said, let me ask you something really seriously. He goes, sure. And I said, is that about the kids or is that about you? Well, we have to go to all of those shows so we can get comments from the judges because they won't, the score won't go up. And I went, no. We're not talking about the score. Is going to those contests so that you can get your score to go up, is that about them or is that about you? And he thought for a second, he looked at me and he says, I see what you're saying. You know, we've got to make sure that with this activity, we don't overwhelm.
Right.
I've said that 3 or 4 times. It's so important nowadays that we use festivals and competitions as a tool to teach our students, to give them an opportunity to perform for crowds that are there just for them. They're not there just to watch the football team and the bands, the halftime entertainment, that the crowds are there just to see them. And like you said, you know, if there's an event going on, I've done that too. I've sent kids home to go to the homecoming dance, and like a whole bus will go home and a whole bus stays there to watch the rest of the bands. Cause I think that's important too, that they support everyone else in their endeavors on the field and that those other bands see them there, whether it be concert or marching. I used to do that with concert too, make my kids sit in the audience and listen to the other groups during a festival.
Very good. Very good. Where I'm going to put a link to your book onto the show notes. And is there another way that people can reach you, a website or?
All right. So first off, the book is available on Amazon.com. It's also, I think a link is going to be provided on banddirector.com. I'm working with those people to get something up about that. It may not be there right now. It'll be there within the next week or two. People can always email me at my personal email address, which is gmartin2144@gmail.com. And speaking of the book, you know, we kind of skipped over a little bit about why I wrote it. But almost every – I've noticed this since I've been teaching college for the last 20 years. Almost every college and university around this country has some sort of band pageantry or drill writing or marching band techniques type course. And there's a couple of books that have been out there. I think it's Wayne Markowitz. I think he's done a really nice one. But there's nothing that is written from Band Director 101 stage. You know, we all of us that teach this course around the country, we all incorporate different things. So I'm not saying that my book is an end all, because it's not. It's a really more of a starting point for them. But I tried to write it so that people around the country who teach this course can have a resource that they can use, and to make it something that a brand new teacher that gets out into the field can use it kind of like a band director 101 for the first year or so to have some resources. Like I said, it's not complete. There's just no way to put everything that needs to be put into a book like that. That it would be 500 pages.
Yeah.
So I tried to kind of keep it like the main ideas. Like, you know, there's a section in there on how to deal with angry parents. I start off the whole thing like I start off my class here about development of some kind of a handbook. Nowadays, we put them online. Back in the old days, when I first started teaching, we had physical handbooks that you used to have to sit and every single year retype the thing. So it's a practical approach, but at the same time, it's something that collegiate professors can use to kind of guide their process for teaching the course. So I tried to accomplish both.
And I have to say that it was, I just recently earned my master's degree in 2012 in music ed, and I took a marching band techniques course, and I don't remember what the book was. It had a lot of good information, but this book to me is, I'm learning a ton from it, even though I'm now in about my seventh year of teaching marching band. I've been 30 years in the music field, so I'm catching up to you a little bit there. But for about 7 years teaching marching band, I kind of missed out that portion of life. I went to the army bands right out of high school, and the only marching we did there was parade.
Right.
And so I never marched collegially, and in my early teaching career, didn't have a marching band either.
Well, you know, again, there's things in there, how to develop a fundamentals program. There's some rehearsal techniques, both indoor and outdoor rehearsal things that go on. How to develop your leadership in the band. You know, you don't pick a drum major and say, go, be free, you know, fly. Teach them, give them the tools with which they can be successful when they're out trying to be the leaders that we're trying to develop. There's things in there that a huge portion of the book is devoted to how to plan a show from beginning, from concept point, all the way through putting it on the field, how to develop, you know, very elementary drill writing techniques and suggestions, you know, as far as how to take a piece of music and how do you develop movement that goes with it.
Uh-huh.
You know, so all of that kind of stuff is covered in there. Obviously, it's impossible in a book of 150 or 60 pages to teach somebody how to write drill like some of these great drill writers we've got out there nowadays. But at least it gives them a start. And like anything else, the best way you learn how to do something is by doing it. You know, I started off arranging my own music, writing my own drill, and realized very quickly that my talents did not lie in the notes on the page. They lay more towards the dots on the page. So that's kind of, and I just practiced writing drill. I just wrote drill by hand because we didn't have computers in those days, and learned just from trial and error and then from asking people in the business. And so, I mean, I just really, my whole goal for this is to kind of pay it forward, if you will. You know, take the 38 years of my experience that I have had in this field and try to put some stuff on the page that will make the future teachers, at least for the next 10, 15 years, make their job just a little easier because they have the information that I had to learn through trial and error. So
I find myself always telling my students that I tell them, you come after me, so you should be better than me.
Better. That's
and
right.
I want you to learn what I learned now when that you're 17, 18, and be able to, by the time you're pushing 50, be able to
right.
be way past where I'm at.
Yeah, the greatest compliment I could ever receive is 10, 15, 20 years from now, somebody that took this book and started off will take it and then make it a better book, you know, and put a better guide out there based on the information they've accrued. Because you know yourself, this profession is constantly changing.
Yeah.
It's so drastically different from when I first started.
Any final words of advice for the listeners?
I guess I would really have to say teaching for me is my passion and music is my process. Band is my process, but teaching is where my passion lies. And I know in the trenches, in the schools, these days, it's very difficult. It's very challenging. It's very stressful. But I think it's very important to focus on the fact that we are making a difference. We're making a huge difference in the lives of these people that are coming through our doors for 4 years and then we seldom see again. You know, I'm sure you're experiencing it now. I'm experiencing it more. I'm kids from 20, 25 years ago are contacting me via email. I don't have a Facebook page on purpose. Because I've got probably 15,000 former students now at this point in my career. And if I opened a Facebook page, I would never get anything done. So, but they're finding my email address and they're emailing me and thanking me for the things that I taught them and how much of a difference their lives have been as a result of being in band and going through my program. We're making a difference. We're changing lives in doing what we do. And so every time there's a budget issue or the buses don't show up or the coaches have called a practice opposite one of our rehearsals or an angry parent thinks that we're destroying their child, I think it's important to remember that we're making a difference.
Awesome. That's final, great final words of advice. And thank you so much for your time and expertise on this program.
Thank you.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band team.